Okay, the first song was Chasing You, right? Chasing You. That was the name of that song, Chasing You. Not a Creeper song. Not the weird guy down the street that's chasing you. Not the bunny rabbit standing outside. Wow. Okay, we had a great day today. We saw a guy walking down the street with a full beard in a bunny costume. I don't know if that's a New York thing or what. And he was waving no sign. He wasn't paid to be in that bunny costume. He was just enjoying it. Chasing You. Who are we chasing? We're chasing the lion and the lamb. So we're chasing after someone. We find him and we find out who he is. We find out there is this beautiful duality. He is not only this strong lion. I think of that, I think of The Lion King. How many of you have seen that movie, The Lion King? There's this moment where the little lion, Simba, is surrounded by hyenas. Do you remember this scene in this movie? He's surrounded by hyenas and they're laughing at him because they're laughing hyenas. That's what hyenas do. They're laughing at him and they're about to attack him. And then he knows he's a lion, but he's never had to use his authority before. You know, his growl. So he rears back with all the strength that he has. He goes to growl and it comes out like a weak meow. And they laugh at him even more. And then he goes deeper. He's going to do it one more time. And he goes to give this roar and it's the most massive roar ever. And it even surprises him. And then the camera angle turns, you know, and it's his dad behind him. It's Mufasa. Mufasa is growling at the same time as Simba. And I think that is such an amazing picture of God as the lion roaring on our behalf. And then there's this sweet part, that sacrificial part, that part that represents the price that he paid out of his love for us, which is the lamb. So we chase him, we get him, and then we find out who he is. And what does that give us? What does that bring us? A life change in that moment, right? When we realize who he is and we surrender our life to him, our lives are never the same. And it's a glorious day. Song number 3, glorious day. That song that we sang about our testimony, about one thing being our tomb until the day when we found him. And when he called our names, we ran out of that grave. Man, I love that song. Because I think that each one of us that have even just tasted a little bit of the presence of God, of the touch of God, we have a bit in that song. We have come running out of the grave. And we're no longer slaves. At that point. And then it goes on to where when you realize you're not a slave and you have nothing to fear and that he split the sea so we could walk right through it. And our fears are drowned in his perfect love. Those are good lyrics. Then what other thing do we have? What does that bring out of us? What does that compel? What does that pull out of us? It pulls out worship. It pulls out praise. And what can we sing that's one of the greatest words of all that heaven sings? Hallelujah. 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 And that's the inhale. Ah, we're inhaling. And then that exhale is build my life. Wow. We just went through the entire progression of the gospel of Christianity in the first 6 songs of the night. So that's pretty awesome. But there's something that it all boils down to. And in this day and age, I think, as, you know, Courtney and I and the boys, Jed and Elijah, who just walked in late. No, I'm just joking. We've been in some form or fashion to 8 countries this year. Let me count them up. We're in Brazil. I've been to Brazil 4 times already this year. Courtney's been twice. The boys have been once. And then we went to France and to Portugal. That was a couple weeks after we were with you guys in March. And we have some stories to tell. Oh, maybe someday we'll tell them. I'm going to knock that thing off. That is awesome. By the way, that is so cool. I need to put my water in it. I'm going to use it. Woo! Awesome. We went to Portugal and to France, and it was unbelievable. Have you ever gone to a country where you know nobody, and you only know the person that's giving you a ride through Facebook? Not a message, but a picture. That was how our France trip started. We showed up at the airport and got our bags and looking for a familiar face and gave a hesitant wave to this lady that looked familiar from the Facebook picture, and she gave a hesitant wave back to us, and that was where our trip started. Oh, man, it was incredible. And they spoke no English. And we hadn't spoken any French in 20 years. But God is good. So then from there, we were in Uganda, and then came back from there, went again to Brazil. I also went to Ecuador, and then I went to Zambia last month. Then I went to Costa Rica. We've had a crazy last month, and we had a hurricane named Irma. And, oh, wow, it's been a month. And then Courtney and I go back to Brazil. Courtney went to Brazil, actually, in August. I went there. That was one of the trips I mentioned. And then we're going back in November. And on and on and on. And, you know, the world is not only crazy in the United States. You can watch the news in France, and it's crazy. You can watch the news in Brazil, and it's crazy. All over the world, there's upheaval in this world. Like, it's more than I ever remember. I'm sure that you could all say the same. What happens when your device gets too full? You know, every website that you go to, everything that you visit on your phone, it clogs your phone up. It's called a cache. There are bits that are remembered all the time in your phone, and it eventually will fill your phone until you do the one thing that we should all do every once in a while, especially in our lives, and that is reset, right? Power off, and then power back on the phone, and it clears it all away. And then you only have the things on the phone that you actually need. It wipes away all the unnecessary. And I was thinking about that during worship. I heard the word reset. And I thought, man, this is what the body of Christ needs right now, because if we allow ourselves, we could be clogged with all of the negativity that is surrounding us in the world, all of the negativity that is poured on us through media, through just people's worry in everyday life. And we have a lot to be worried about in this day and age. But when we reset, it knocks away all the unnecessary, and then we're left with the things that originally we needed on the device or in our lives that mean the most to our existence. And now I want to take you back to whatever your testimony is. If you have received Jesus as your Lord and Savior, there was a moment where you made a decision, right? Nobody else could make that decision for you. There's not an example that works of somebody that comes to church and sits there and feels the pull of the Lord and then says, oh man, I should respond, but I'm going to let my pastor do it for me. That never works. I should worship, but I'm going to let the worship leader do it for me. I feel the pull to the nations, but I'm going to let the missionary go because that's what they're paid to do. You don't hear these as successful stories, right? This is not a successful way of thinking. This means nothing, actually. So if you trace it all the way back to the beginning, there was a moment where you had to make your own decision, right? I mean, was it just me? I mean, Courtney raises her hand, but you kind of have to. And so I want to take us back all the way to that time tonight, because sometimes we have to remember what it felt like when we made that decision before there was mountains of doubt or mountains of worry or circumstances or the things in this life that so easily entangle us, that just so easily distract us. When all that stuff is heaped on us, the last thing we remember is that moment, that feeling when we just surrendered it all to Jesus, that feeling when we fell in love with Him. Sometimes it's important to remember that. So I want to talk tonight just briefly about some decision times in the Bible and how simple it was. Because life tends to be complicated, right? And we tend to make it more complicated. But with Jesus, it's as simple as turning to Him, right? We don't have to go through this ritualistic cleansing anymore to be able to maybe live through our encounter with the Lord. You know, back in the Old Testament, I don't know if you guys have read Leviticus before, but my goodness, the stuff that they had to go through in those times when the presence of God was in a temple or a tent in a room called the Holy of Holies and an ark that could not be approached by us. It was only reserved for the select few, the high priests, and only they could go in after they had gone through a ritual of cleansing. And if there was any spot or any wrinkle or any failure in their life at all, they would not survive the presence of God, because sin cannot stand in the presence of God. You know the story of the time they were moving the ark, and that guy reached out to steady it because those guys were about to drop the ark. So well-meaning. Oh, no! He touched the ark, but he wasn't one of the few. And he fell down dead in that moment. It was no joke. But because of Jesus, this is not our story. Because of Jesus, we have access to the face of God. And it's that simple, right? It's that simple. And he paid a high price for it to be that simple. I love the story of the call of the disciples. You know, when you turn to Matthew and you get beyond the genealogy, which I think we've talked about one of these times, how actually the genealogy in Matthew 1 is one of the most extraordinary scriptures of all time, because it's a written record of a 4,000-year kept promise by God, fulfilled in an unconventional way. Oh, the only way, the promise that God made to Abraham, reaffirmed with David, and on through the Old Testament, brought to completion in Jesus. You know, he wasn't born naturally. And Matthew goes through this whole genealogy, right? And the genealogy, the biology, is broken just before Jesus is born, because it traces it through Joseph, and Joseph had nothing to do with the biology of Jesus, but God did it that way on purpose to make a way for us to be disconnected from our natural past and receive this new birth, this in the Lord that we quoted during worship tonight in John 1. Not born of a husband's will or a man's decision and all that, but born of God. So you get past that, which we could talk about for a long time, obviously. And you get to John or Matthew chapter 4, and in here you start to see the stories of the disciples when they had their first encounter with Jesus. And I like to read through this because it's so simple. They just made a decision. You know, we make countless decisions every day. You might think of yourself sometimes as incapable of making a major decision. But we make decisions all the time. I heard a guy preach about this in Brazil, because Brazil has this soda called Guaraná. And Guaraná is so good. But daily, I don't know a Brazilian that actually drinks water. I think that they get their water through soda, if that's possible. like in England, they get their water through tea. I've even read that on the PG Tips box. A good source of your daily need for water. And I'm like, isn't tea doesn't it dehydrate you? Clever marketing right there. So I heard a guy in Brazil use this example, you know, challenging the young people of that nation to make a decision. A big deal, right? Unless you realize you make decisions every day. And Brazilians wake up in the morning, they have to decide between Guaraná and Coke. And then they go to lunch and they have to decide between Guaraná and Coke. And then they go to dinner and they have to decide between Guaraná and Coke. This is their main decision that they have to make in their lives. But when you break it down to simple decisions, you realize you're capable of it. And making a simple decision is no more difficult than making a life-changing decision. It's just making a decision. We have a lot of books about self-help in this country. And very few books and messages preached about personal responsibility. Is that true? But we are not helpless in this world. We have the ability to make a decision to accept personal responsibility for something, and then to walk in the grace and favor of Jesus. But it starts with a decision, right? Never in the Bible did Jesus force himself on anyone. They came to him. They received him, and then he worked on their behalf. But never, ever did he pull someone in unwilling. And so it all starts right there with us, and it did with all of us the very first time that we received Jesus, the very first time that we fell in love. We made a decision, and it was a good feeling, right? So I heard a man, a South African pastor, a couple of years ago, a great guy named Corné Newkirk. I'm pronouncing it totally wrong, but Corné is pronounced right. And he told the story of what it meant back in these New Testament days when a rabbi would walk through the city. A rabbi was always apparently going to choose a protege. He was going to choose from the young men some young men to train in the ways of the faith. And so they would pass through the city and they would identify the young men that were qualified, the young men that were ready, the cream of the crop, the best of the best. And it was a high honor for those young men to be chosen to be the apprentice of the rabbi. And so every Jewish young man back then would know this process. And only a few would be selected and most would be passed over. So if you think about that in light of the story of the call of the disciples, it's even more beautiful because not only were they normal people, fishermen, they were trade workers. Does that make sense? They weren't professional speakers. They weren't YouTube stars. They weren't famous musicians. They were fishermen. Their livelihood depended on their catch that day. Is there a box of Kleenex around here?
Perfect.
Let me help you, brother, son. So you can imagine the feeling, like Peter and John are on, you know, they're in their boat, they're on the shore, they're mending their nets, they're doing what fishermen do because they have to work. If they don't work, they don't catch. If they don't catch, they don't eat and they don't sell. That is their livelihood. Who can relate to this in this place? We can all relate to this. But then Jesus comes by and they see him because they'd heard the stories. They knew of what the Messiah represented, the Messiah, whoever he was, whenever he was coming, like the ultimate rabbi. And they'd heard of Jesus, I'm sure, because news was already traveling. And they see Jesus walking down the beach and they see him as a rabbi. And then Jesus walks up to them. And you have to understand that they had already been passed over. They had already been deemed unqualified by society, by faith, already deemed less than, not good enough, not equal to the task, not equal, not acceptable. And then another rabbi walks by and he looks at them and you see the beautiful story of the call of the disciples in Matthew 4, and it's in Mark, and it's in all the Gospels. Subtle differences, but equally beautiful. It starts in verse 18, as Jesus was walking beside the Sea of Galilee, he saw two brothers, Simon called Peter and his brother Andrew. They were casting a net into the lake, for they were fishermen. In Matthew's account, Jesus walks up to them and he says, come follow me. And can you imagine what they must have been feeling in that moment? Like what? Elbowing each other. It's a rabbi. And he didn't walk by us. This is a rabbi and he stopped. And he's speaking to us. And he's acknowledging us, but not just acknowledging us. He's inviting us to do what the other rabbis said wasn't even possible for us. He's inviting us to take the place that we were already passed over for originally. We're fishermen. We're not educated. We're not qualified. But the rabbi walks by again and he says, follow me. And I love how long it took them to decide. Verse 20, at once. They left their nets and followed him. At once, they left their nets and followed him. Let's turn quickly. I have to find it because I'm just thinking of it. You guys with me? Dun, dun, dun. I think it's Luke's account. Luke was a doctor. Luke liked to write details. Details, details. Yeah, chapter 5. Thanks, Courtney. One day, as Jesus was standing by a lake with the people crowding around him and listening to the word of God, he saw at the water's edge two boats left there by the fishermen who were washing their nets. He got into one of the boats, the one belonging to Simon, and asked him to put out a little from the shore. Then he sat down and taught the people from the boat. When he had finished speaking, he said to Simon, put out into the deep water. Let's go fishing. Let down the nets for a catch. And Simon answered, Master, we've worked hard all night and haven't caught anything. But because you say so, I'll set down the nets. When they had done so, they caught such a large number of fish that their nets begin to break. So they signaled their partners in the other boat to come and help them. And they came and filled both boats so full that they began to sink. When Simon Peter saw this, he fell at Jesus' knees and said, "Go away from me, Lord. I'm a sinful man." So dramatic. For he and all his companions were astonished at the catch of fish they had taken. And so were James and John, the sons of Zebedee, Simon's partners. I love the detail in this account. Then Jesus said to Simon, "Don't be afraid. From now on, you'll catch men." So they pulled their boats on the shore, left everything, and followed him. It doesn't say that they went quickly to market and capitalized on this miracle, because surely what was in their boats right there was unprecedented. I don't know if you've ever seen that show. Is it Wicked Tuna? What is it? Dangerous Catch or something like that. The ones where they're out and they're catching these huge tuna and they're bringing them back in for market. And they get thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars for one big tuna, right? But they have to bring it in the right way, and the body temperature can't drop too fast, or the toxins are released in the meat and it doesn't make good sushi, and the Japanese people won't buy that. I've seen one or two of those shows. It's got to be Deadliest Catch. But this represented an unprecedented fortune that they had just been given. And then Jesus says, in a way, there's better. There's better. You can follow me. These fish are meaningless. This fortune that you're about to receive, and you can decide to capitalize on it, it pales in comparison to what I'm offering you right now, because I'm the rabbi, and I have chosen you. Follow me, and these fish will mean nothing, because you'll have men. That's what he's invited us all into. The things that we think we're working towards, our ideas of success, in the natural, they pale in comparison to what the Lord has in store for you. They're not the only thing. And so when the rabbi walked up to them, showed them amazing power, and then said, "Follow me," there was not a question. Not a question at all. So then back to Matthew. It's so simple. Follow me. And they followed him. They didn't take out their calculators and see what it would cost them to do that and see if it was worth it. They didn't pull out the scales and weigh the fish to see exactly what they'd be missing. They just said, "Okay. Okay. Okay." Verse 20 of Matthew 4, at once they left their nets and followed him. Immediately, at once. I love these words. How simple are these? Just not even thinking about it. Okay, here we go. Here we go into our destiny. At once, immediately. Verse 21, going on from there, he saw two other brothers, James, son of Zebedee, and his brother John. They were in a boat with their father Zebedee, preparing their nets. Jesus called to them, and immediately they left the boat and their father sitting in the boat. That's pretty intense. I believe it's in Mark or Luke where it says that they also left the men that they had hired. So they left their investment right there on the beach. Forsook it all. Follow Jesus. They left their dad. Their dad was probably sitting there going, "What in the world?" Especially in light of the amazing catch they had just had. Their dad was probably so proud of them in that moment. So relieved, "My sons finally caught enough fish to make ends meet. And now they can take care of me, and I don't have to sit my old rear end in this boat anymore." And then all of a sudden they get up and walk away, leaving him with all those fish to clean. But it's just that simple pursuit. Simple pursuit. It goes on from there, describes how Matthew came. I love how Matthew describes how Matthew came. But it's beautiful. It says that he was sitting, he's a tax collector, working. Jesus came up to him and said, "Follow me." And he got up from the table, probably where there was money, and left the money. I mean, all these guys are leaving money. Isn't that amazing? They're all leaving money. Not that money is the problem, but money oftentimes makes our decisions for us. And that's what I love about these guys. In the face of a lot of money, they didn't let the money make the decisions. They probably, you know, appreciated money and what money can do, like we all do. But they did not let it make the decisions for them. But it was a simple decision for these guys. They didn't overthink it. But we live in a world that encourages us to overthink everything, to think of every problem, to make a contingency plan for everything, just in case. Just in case that guy in North Korea wakes up and pushes the button. Just in case the economy is in a bubble and it bursts. Just in case we get sick. Just in case this, just in case that. We are taught to think of every eventuality before we make a decision. When Jesus is saying, follow me, and we're saying, but, and these buts last a long time. And Jesus is so patient with us. And he's saying, just follow me. Just waiting for that simple thing. And finally, an Old Testament one just to round it out. The call of Elisha. Do you know this story? It's in 1 Kings chapter 19. Let's turn there. If I can find my Bible, there it is. First Kings 19. Now, this is the moment, the next chapter after Elijah and the prophets of Baal, which was a pretty epic story in the Bible, right? In the very next chapter, in verse 19, it starts, the call of Elisha. So Elijah went from there and found Elisha, son of Shaphat. He was plowing with 12 yoke of oxen, again, a farmer. Fisherman, a farmer, normal people. And he himself was driving the 12th pair. He wasn't the boss, he was working. Elijah went up to him and threw his cloak around him, and that signified, you're my guy, you're my protege, you've been chosen. Again, very meaningful for this young guy. Elisha then left his oxen and ran after Elijah. Let me kiss my father and mother goodbye, he said, and then I'll come with you. And Elijah was like, oh, go back. What have I done? Ah, oh, this guy's a mama's boy. So Elisha left him and went back. And this is what Elisha did. And I want you to hear this because this is what we need to do. This is symbolic of what we need to do. He took his yoke of oxen and he slaughtered them. I'm not saying go home and kill anyone or anything. But I am saying, put to death your backup plan. He burned the plowing equipment. You might think, man, this is radical. What was he thinking? What happened if Elijah snores or something like that? They get out on the road together and Elijah forgets his CPAP machine and Elijah can't get a night of sleep because of the chronic snoring. And Elisha's like, man, forget this. Are you guys looking at each other that have CPAP machines? I was on a trip playing keyboard for another worship leader. And we went to the Netherlands and we were in Amsterdam. And the guy that was my roommate on this trip came back really late. And I'd already been asleep because 2 days before I was in Uganda, flew all the way back to the U.S. and then flew all the way back to Amsterdam. I passed through Amsterdam on the way back to the U.S. I was like, see you tomorrow. And ended up back there. So I was ready for a nap. And I get there, and I'm sleeping in the room, and then the guy walks in late at night, 1 a.m., he wakes me up. He's like, man, I can't find a place to plug my machine in, so I'm just going to wear this Breathe Right strip. It's going to be okay. I think it'll work. No, that guy falls asleep in approximately 2.5 seconds, and it is the loudest snoring I've ever heard in my life. And I'm like, that Breathe Right strip, whoever lied to this man, I'm going to find that person. So finally, after about 10 minutes, I stand up. And I'm like, he can't find a plug? Well, he needs an extension cord. So I go down to the lobby and I rent an extension cord. Wouldn't even let me borrow one. I had to rent it. I come back up. I wake the guy, turn all the lights up in the room, wake the guy up, I put the extension cord. Fix it, man. But then when I turn the lights on, he looks by his bed. He's like, oh, there's a plug right there. Like, man. But what if Elijah had this issue, right? And Elisha finds out too late after he's already burned his plowing equipment. He slaughtered all his oxen. And now he's like, man, this guy snores and I'm never going to sleep again. So he took his yoke of oxen and he slaughtered them. He burned the plowing equipment to cook the meat from the oxen. I'm sure that's not very tender, but, and gave it to the people and they ate. So he went back and he systematically removed any opportunity that he would give himself to return to his old life. That is the power of decision making. But it wasn't a pastor that did that for him. It wasn't the audible voice of God that encouraged him. He was chosen. It registered in his spirit like it does in all of us that day that we find Jesus, that day that we feel what freedom feels like for the first time, that day where we understand what salvation means. That beautiful day, I remember my day. That day, and I remember the day I met Courtney, because those days were the days for me where life changed. And it was so simple, and it was so sweet. It took a while with Courtney. I will not lie. But we'll say our wedding day. Man, I remember when life was simple, where it was easy to make a decision like that. Then he set out to follow Elijah and became his attendant. And so I just want you tonight to remember that very first moment. I remember I had dug myself a deep hole in life when I was in my late teenage years. I'd made stupid, stupid decisions. And I was bearing the brunt of them. You know, in Psalm 32, it describes how your sin will eat away at your bones. How there is no sleep that comes. And I was living this out. I was not sleeping. I was just in a deep hole. How many have ever been in a deep hole in your life? And I thought, I have got to come clean. But the last person I want to talk to is my dad. Because my dad, from the moment I could hear and understand English, would tell me, don't shame the family name. Which is good. It's good advice. And with this deep hole I dug for myself, I thought, man, the last person that's going to have any love in their heart for me or any understanding is my dad. This is going to be terrible. But he's the only one home, and I'm about to die in my room. So I got myself up, and I went in, and I did what Psalm 32 says. I confessed my sin. I just talked to my dad, and I thought, man, he was going to bring the hammer down on me. And instead, when he raised his hands, it wasn't a hammer. It was a hug. It is a beautiful picture of the love that Jesus has for us. I saw it that night in my dad, and I'll never forget it, because instantly I broke all the weight that I had been carrying around my whole life. It fell off my shoulders. I went back to my room stunned at the freedom that the Lord had just given me. And it didn't make any sense. I went back to my room and I wrote a song in that moment, out of my joy and my glee. I mean, it was just like, I am overcome with joy in this moment, where 5 minutes before, I was dying. Then all of a sudden, I had a fresh breath of life breathed into me. How many of you have ever had an experience like that? That's what I want to call your attention to tonight, because the world will try to dilute these experiences that we've had with Jesus. Yeah, that was great, but this is now. That was sweet, I'm sure, but this is real life. How many of you have ever had these thoughts? This is the lie of the world that tries to steal our song, that tries to steal our worship, that tries to steal our joy when we need it the most. What would happen? What would happen in this world if there was a remnant, a group of people that would stand up and say, I hear all the news and it doesn't affect me. I see all that's going on in the world, but I have a song to sing. I see what you're all going through, but I'm going to be the sign and the wonder. I'm going to be the son and the daughter of God that all creation is obviously groaning for the revealing of. You know, it says in the Bible, all creation groans and longs for the revealing of the sons of God. Is it ever groaned any louder than it's groaning now? But yet, so many of us stand silent because we've let so much of our circumstance and the weight of the world to amass on our shoulders, when in the scripture it says that his yoke is easy and his burden is light. It's not hard. It's not difficult. We've got to shed that cloak of heaviness and put on a garment of praise. The world will never say that that's the solution, but this book bears witness. And our original experiences with the Lord bear witness to the life-altering power of his response to our decision. Our decision. Our decision. In Hebrews chapter 11, the hall of faith, we'll end here and we'll go back into worship. It talks about all these great men, right? This is the hall of fame in the Bible, the hall of faith. Tells about all their exploits and what amazing men they were. And then in verse 13, it says, all these people were still living by faith when they died. They didn't even see the things promised. Ha! They only saw them from afar. Or they only saw them and welcomed them from a distance. What they saw from a distance is what we're living today. What they saw from a distance was that hope of a future day of salvation for the people that had been kept under the thumb of the enemies of that day. But they saw future hope. That future hope is Jesus, and we have that hope. And they admitted that they were aliens and strangers on earth. I love that. You know what? We are that. Don't forget that you don't belong here. The moment you accept Jesus, this earth is not your home anymore. We are not of this world. We've been bought for a price. That means that the things that touch the world, the things that affect the world, they don't touch us. They don't affect us because we were born from above. Do you understand that? This beauty of the new creation. I heard a great quote the other day. God doesn't just make things better. He makes things new. Wow. Man, I'm sure that's one of those charismatic phrases that have eluded me for my entire life, because that sounds too good, or it sounds too good to be new. You know what I mean? That should be a quote that has been quoted for centuries. But that is the truth that we so easily forget. He doesn't just make things better. He makes things new. Who needs something made new tonight? People who say such things show that they are looking for a country of their own, because they don't belong where they are. We don't belong stuck under a mountain of worry. We don't belong stuck under a mountain of circumstance. That's not our home. That's not our country. We are looking for a country of our own. And here's the beautiful part. If they had been thinking of the country they had left, they would have had opportunity to return. Do you hear that? That's basically saying, if you give yourselves an option to return to life as it was, you will. That's human nature. Instead, they were longing for a better country. Tonight, who's longing for a better country? A heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. That's the word of the Lord to you tonight. He has prepared a city for you. This one is not your home. And what attests to that more than anything is that moment where Jesus called you and you responded. And if you haven't yet, if he's been calling you for years and you haven't yet responded, let tonight be your night. I want to encourage you, you're not late. You're right on time. This night was designed for you. There's a place reserved at the table for you. It has your name there. But it all starts with a decision. And then it progresses into the simple pursuit. And that's the song I want to introduce to you guys tonight. It's a special one. I heard it maybe a year ago, and then I heard it again last week on another album. I thought, man, there is something in my heart that resonates with this song. Because it's not as complicated as men would have you believe. It's not as difficult as this world would fool you into thinking that it is. When you say yes to Jesus, there's something called grace that walks right beside you, and mercy that walks right beside you, that can clear the path, that can part the sea, so that you can walk right through it. But it all starts with a hunger and that need to have your hunger satisfied. Pastor Josh can't satisfy your hunger for you. Worship leaders can't satisfy your hunger for you. The latest book or album cannot satisfy your hunger for you. The hunger satisfied when you turn to Jesus, you immediately follow him. If your immediately starts tonight, let it start tonight. If your immediately started 10 or 20 years ago, remind yourself of it tonight. This world needs it. For the sake of this world, for the sake of your family, for the sake of the people that you work with, for the sake of the people that he has assigned you to reach in this world, now is the time. Now, not a moment from now. Now is the time. The clock is ticking. I'm not a doomsday end timer guy, but it's obvious that we're getting closer and closer and closer all the time to the day of his return. You know the parable of the 10 virgins, the 5 who had themselves prepared. They had the oil, they had the lamps, and they were prepared in that moment that the bridegroom was coming. And then there were 5 that didn't. I find it most strange, and you can find this in the New Testament and read it for yourself, most strange that all 10 of them had lamps. They all went out to meet the bridegroom. 5 of them must have known, because of the weight of what they were carrying, that they didn't have the oil. It was not a mystery to them. They didn't go to light and be like, oh no, there's no oil. Well, clearly there's no oil because your lamp's too light. And they all trimmed their wicks. What craziness is that? The 5 that didn't even have oil, and they knew they didn't, they went ahead and went through the motions, but never prepared themselves. Never had the fuel. Going through the motions is not enough. Looking the part is not enough. Having the right equipment is not enough. You've got to have the fuel. You've got to have the breath. And that breath only comes when we're close to him. When we draw close to him, he promises to draw close to us. This is a worship night. This is the best time to put this into practice. Amen? And then he fills you up, and then the next thing you do is you exhale what he just inhaled to you. And the world has never needed your exhale more than it needs it now. Kingston has never needed your exhale more than it needs it now. We're waiting for this mystery wind to blow through and just make it all right. When that wind, it comes from here. We just have to release it. We are the mystery breath of God. I hope that this has made some sense to you tonight. Tonight, the rabbi's walking by. I love that picture. He's walking by, and he's like, I know you've been passed over before. I know somebody said, someone else. Someone walked by at some point in your life and was like, I choose other. But tonight, the rabbi, the real one, the rabbi of rabbis, the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords, he's walking by you again tonight. And he's saying, I don't choose other. I choose you. I choose you. You're the one that I've been looking for. Yeah, this, yeah, that, yeah, excuses, yeah, past this, past that, 5 minutes ago this, 5 minutes ago that. Now, it doesn't change the fact that you're still the one that he chooses. Ah, what an honor. What an honor. He's inviting us to follow him. The decision is ours to make.